having the stalking skills of a leopard's ghost. So, as Jess went, this was a damn good one. So why wasn't Oates laughing? The chief wasn't, for one. Her katara remained poised, and she was carefully still. Hood may as well have been a raised cobra for all the calm he brought to the room. There was no weapon in his hands, but he'd never needed one to be lethal. But the real reason Oates wasn't laughing was because a question blew past his lips first. Where the fuck is Zhrika?
Behind you, Hood replied, filling the chamber with a whisper.
Oates spun, confusion mounting. The landing was empty. The chief had fallen for it too, and cursed when they turned to find Hoodwink gone.
The hells? Oates said.
That's not fucking possible. Fetch's jaw was locked. The way she remained ready, listening more than looking, didn't ease Oates's brimming disquiet. Their eyes had been off Hood for a heartbeat, and he'd vanished. The room's window was little more than an arrow slit. Not even their four-limbed serpent of a bastard could have slithered through. He had to be hiding. But there was nowhere, just a couple of chests and the bed. The most celebrated killer in the lots wouldn't have dived beneath the mattress like a guilty child. Still, Oates stole a glance to make sure when he knelt to rouse Jackal. Yet calling his name and slapping his face didn't even get a groan. Oates looked up at Fetch.
What do you think we...
War Chief! The cry came up the stairs, followed by a panting slophead. His eyes were wide in his blanched face.
What? Fetch demanded. It's... I don't know. In the yard.
The slop pointed a quivering hand out the door.
Stay with him,
Fetch ordered, nodding at Jackal, before rushing out of the room. She might have meant Oates, too, but if so, he defied her and left the duty to the slophead. Thank the hells they were going down, for he managed to keep up. They ran out of the keep and found the yard full of sons. A dozen slops held lowered spears alongside half as many sworn brothers with trained stock bows. All were silent, all eyeing the thing holding the big golden axe. It was of a size with Oates, equal in height and muscle. Well, equal in muscle before Oates had lost some meat to injury and idleness. The flesh covering its corded thews was blue, blue as a clear sky. And there was plenty of that flesh to see, for the big creature wore nothing but a wrap of white linen about its waist. Looked like the bottom half of the baggy garment Oates had seen on those ancient, armless Imperium statues. The mane growing from the thing's head was also blue, but so dark it was near to black, bronze bangles winking at the end of the odd braid scattered among the mass. A pair of horns curved out from the hair, looking like an animal's, save they were made of brazen metal rather than bone. Oates couldn't tell if they were growing from the creature's skull or some kind of headdress. Seeing that its feet were cloven and the hooves were also bronze settled the doubt. Hells, there was even a tail, fleshed and muscular as the rest of this demon. The face was broad, the bones beneath sharply defined. Intelligent eyes regarded the surrounding mongrels and their pointed weapons with fearless disdain. Its own weapon, that great exotic axe, looked forged from a single piece of metal and was held in both hands, resting low across the thighs. The sons were alarmed by its presence, yet none were shouting challenges or demands. They stood silent, wary, seeing the danger, yet mesmerized by its appearance. The blue devil demanded the eye, left the beholders awed, until the tubby shape kneeling behind it stood up from the roque's side. Crafty turned and flashed a smile.
Greetings, dread fetching, he said, wiping his ring-laden hands with a richly embroidered kerchief. I desire we should speak.
The chief launched herself at the wizard, legs covering the distance in a single pounce. The demon sidestepped to intercept her, shoving the haft of its axe crossways into her hurtling body.
Twisting at the moment of impact, the beast moved to toss Fetch onto the stones, but she gripped the axe haft with her free hand, pulling with the motion, dragging the demon down with her, and planting a boot in its stomach. Rolling, the chief kicked. The demon found it was the one being tossed. Its heavy form bashed the yard. Oates heard it issue a grunt. Fucker could feel pain then. Fetch charged Crafty once more, but seeing her, the demon snarled. Scrambling to its hooves, the creature swept its axe up in the same motion, the golden blade cutting a trench in the cobblestones as it ripped into the air. Fetch wasn't near enough to be struck by the sparking edge, but there came a sound akin to thunder, and an unseen force hit the chief in the back. Punched off her feet, she smote the ground face first.
"Feather that blue fuck!"
Oates yelled at the sons. His own stockbow was still strapped to Ugg's saddle because he was a damned fool ass. As the thrums sang, the demon sneered and struck the butt end of his axe haft into the ground, unleashing another clap of thunder. The bolts burst before they could touch him, shattered by an energy that rattled the yard. And Oates's teeth. Fetch was picking herself up, blood leaking from her nose. Hells. That axe, or whatever sorcery it unleashed, could hurt her. Just like the maiden's spear. She reached her hands and knees, visibly trembling. Crafty stood a pebble's toss in front of her, the pitying expression on his plump face transfixing her fury. So muddled by hatred, Fetch ignored the demon moving in behind her. Oates needed to stop it, to rush that blue fuck and aid his chief, his sister. But he couldn't move. Damn him, he couldn't fucking move. And it wasn't some damn spell. It was fear that rooted him. Fear of living dead women and horned devils with their enchanted spears and axes. Fear of taking another grievous wound. He wasn't afraid to die. It was surviving that terrified him. The sickbed was worse than all the hells.
"Truly, Fetching, I implore you. Let us speak."
Crafty's smug voice ignited Oates's own anger. It was a candle flame compared to what blazed within the chief, but it was enough to get him moving. He took a step. The second came quicker. 10 more, and he would have the wizard by the throat. A hand touched Oates first, strong fingers gripping his shoulder lightly from behind. He turned to find Hoodwink. The pale mongrel shook his head. The slight motion could have been a warning, or a plea. Who could fucking tell from that blank, cadaverous face? Oates pretended to consider, kept his eye from drifting beyond Hood to the door of the keep, where a silent form emerged. Still, Hoodwink whirled the instant before Jackal struck, uncanny speed tearing his tulwar from its sheath to whip Jack's thrusting blade aside. Oates fled their scraping swords, left them to their viper's dance. The devil had Fetch seized in a choking hold, his axe haft wedged beneath her chin. She'd been dragged away from Crafty. Impressive, knowing what it took to move her these days. The sons were tracking the struggle, too afraid to loose lest their bolts strike the war chief.
"You can't hurt her! Fucking shoot!"
Oates bellowed as he bowled toward Crafty. His shouting succeeded in getting bowstrings thrumming, but it also alerted the wizard to his oncoming rush. Crafty pivoted to face him, face betraying no unease. He reached into his robes. Oates braced himself against whatever sorcery was about to flay his flesh or boil his eyeballs. Nothing. Head tucked, eyes clenched, Oates collided with the wizard, got fistfuls of his garment, and bore him to the ground. They landed in the putrid straw of the roque's bed, Oates atop Crafty. He sat up, straddling the wizard's broad gut, and raised a fist. Eyes brimming from the reek of the nest, Oates saw something blocking the face he meant to pulp. A glass jar. Something within was wriggling, flopping over itself. Oates froze. It was a tongue.
"I bear her words as well," Crafty said, his other hand offering up a folded parchment sealed with wax.
Unable to tear his eyes away from the jar's squirming contents,
Oates snatched the parchment. The world had gone mad. He sat astride a Tyrkanian sorcerer next to a dying, monstrous bird. A stone's throw away, one brother fought another in the swiftest clash of blades the world had ever seen. On the other side of the castle yard, a demon wrestled with the chief, using her body as a shield against a storm of thrumbolts bolts and flung spears. Most broke against fetching, but a few found their mark. The blue monster was now bristled and bleeding, but still held fast to the strongest mongrel in the lots. All this madness, and yet, maddest of all, Oates held a letter in his hands. Madder still, he opened it and read.
"I'm safe, Idris. Safer than I've been in a long time. You must get that pair of gorgeous hotheads to listen. Uhad's schemes are fatter than he is, and he's a conniving son of a cunt, but you can trust him to help himself. In doing so, he helped me. You can save Wiley, Idris, but you have to listen. They have to listen. Tell Isabet, if she doesn't forgive Hood, I'll never forgive her. Idris, the bear's been fed."
It wasn't signed. Was this her hand? Oates racked his brain, but couldn't recall if he'd ever read anything she'd written. But the doubt was forced, a caution against his immediate certainty. From the first line, he knew it was her. Wanted it to be her. It was the last that proved it, though.
"The bear's been fed."
That's what she used to say back in the pit, before he'd earned enough to keep her free from the arena. She was always marked for the pit of bait, a fucking hole where small and weak combatants fought animals for the amusement of the crowd. Last to survive was always hauled out and declared the winner. If you had coin enough, the beastmaster could be bribed to feed the animal just before the contest. Not much, but enough to take the edge off its hunger, enough to make the beast more focused on survival than food. Make it more likely to kill the desperate men attacking it with sharpened sticks or broken bottles, rather than run down the little halfling woman keeping well out of reach. Of course, fed or not, what danger was she ever really in? The voice of a god could drive off any animal, kill it even, without effort. But that would have exposed her, given Barsius and Zerko's other hunters a trail to follow. Worse, it would have made her a fitting prospect for the pit of greatness. Why toss a helpless halfling in with the animals when you can pit the tongue in her eye socket against a centaur or a cyclops? Or maybe the big bastard? Oates didn't know all that back then, about what she carried. He thought he was helping her, and quickly found her to be wise. Someone he could trust. Now she was telling him that Crafty was dangerous, but he wasn't out to kill them. He would, though, if forced and given no choice. Oates looked up from the letter. Fetch and Jackal were still fighting. Witnessing their struggles from without, Oates saw what they couldn't from within. Hood and the demon were there to counter the violence Crafty had known was inevitable. He wished to talk, but he must have suspected there were no words from his lips that would ever reach Fetch and Jackal's ears. And they'd both become so powerful. Oates looked down at Crafty. The wizard gave him a knowing grin. The next instant, he was crying out in pain from the punch Oates delivered to his mouth before standing up.
"Doing this because Zhrika says to, not fucking you!"
He strode toward Jackal and Hoodwink, stopped at the edge of their duel.
"Aye, fuck skulls!"
he yelled, reaching into his breeches. Both mongrels flicked a glance his way at the call, but it was the sight of his exposed and dangling cock that arrested their combat.
"I win," Oates told them. "Now put the slicers up."
Jackal gawked, darted a side eye at Hood.
"He's trying to make sure you don't murder Crafty," Oates said, tucking his cods away. "At least not until we've heard what the fat fuck has to say. We don't like it, we'll all help the chief kill him."
He eyed Hoodwink hard.
"All of us, right?"
"We can try,"
came the thin reply. Wasn't exactly satisfying, but Oates had to accept it. He turned away.
Enough!
He bellowed at the sons on his way toward Fetch and the demon. The stockbows ceased flinging bolts at the struggling pair. Fetch continued to fight, tried to say something, but the axe strangled her words.
Chief, Oates said, stepping close. This hell-spawned fuck is going to let go. But you need to let this rest.
He wasn't sure if ruins made flesh could shoot flames from their eyes, but Fetch attempted it.
There's word from Zhrika, Fetch, Oates pressed, holding up the parchment. Sucks epoxy cock, but we need to make peace.
He gave the demon a warning frown and got close enough to whisper in Fetch's ear.
Issa, you keep this up, and there's going to be blood. Once these mongrels here start dying, it's too late. This is crafty. No chance we put him down without losses. We'll lose father if his boys get cut down in a fight that didn't need to happen. You know it. Got a choice here, sister mine. Fetch may need a reckoning, but the war chief needs to palaver.
He drew back enough to look her in the eye. The bond of a lifetime allowed him to convey the last bit without words. We can always kill him later. Nostrils flaring, lips pursing, Fetching nodded, her chin grinding against the metal axe haft.
Let her go, Oates told the demon.
The creature only glared at him, teeth bared.
Fuchtus, Crafty called. Please, release our host.
The monster relinquished his hold. Fetch turned slowly, eyed her adversary up and down.
To be concluded, Fuchtus, she promised.
The demon made no reply. It was pierced by four bolts, nicked and sliced by twice as many others. Its blood was red, and Oates saw the bulge in the jaw, the tension in the throat that betrayed a warrior attempting to ignore considerable pain.
Perhaps, Crafty said, still pitching his voice as he'd come no closer, you would invite us inside.
Fetch stepped around Fuchtus, making the demon tense, but she leveled no aggression toward the wizard beyond a fiery stare.
Say what you came to, Tyrkanian.
Crafty dabbed at his busted lip with the end of a silken scarf. He made a small, humored noise.
I came to say many, many things. But, as I was prepared for your and friend Jackal's impetuous natures, I also came prepared to be brief.
That's a bad start for brief, Crafty,
Jackal said, impatience taking a whetstone to his voice.
Hisparta's king is dead.
The wizard's words were quick, slapping the frown off Jackal's face. Crafty squinted at the blood on his scarf.
A grievous fall from his horse.
Meaning the black womb killed him, Jackal said.
Crafty chuckled.
There is no assassin more deadly than the tragic blend of pomposity and cowardice that formed the late king. A man who has never seen battle leading the parade of a freshly formed army while sitting the back of a bulky and ill-tempered warhorse invites his own peril. No. Truly, his death was his own making, brought by a peevish need to prove to his queen and her kingdom that he was more than the king consort, a title that always chafed upon his vanity and was seldom heard in an attempt to spare the court his tantrums. Though perhaps it is you, friend bastards, that deserve the honor of being named his killers, as he was inspired to incompetent martial pursuits by your rebellion. A rebellion I have come now to help you win.
No chance we will accept your help, Fetch declared.
Well, Crafty sighed, then we are all of us blessed that you need not accept it in order to receive it.
The wizard made a show of giving the roque a coy glance before walking purposefully toward the keep. Fuchtus guarded Crafty's back, watching Fetch and Jackal closely. Once they were both inside, Fetching marched over to the downed bird. Oats and Jackal were only a step behind. The roach was asleep, breathing deep and steady. The maggots had fallen from its eyes. Free from pestilence, its wounds bled clean. Oats could hear the chief's teeth grinding as she beheld the beast. She took a breath and turned to face Hoodwink. It was a command to approach. The colorless mongrel obeyed. Fetch met his silence with her own, demanding with steel eyes that his explanation came before her question. It was a contest she lost.
"How did this happen?" the chief said, when her patience snapped.
"I did as you ordered," Hood answered without feeling.
"I told you to keep her safe."
"Yes, she is safe."
"Where?" Oats barked.
Hood's black eyes shifted to him.
"I will not betray her trust to gain yours."
"She would want me to know."
"No, she does not."
Oats had to pace a small circle to keep from throwing a punch.
"You tasked me to keep her safe," Hood told Fetching. "You also said in matters concerning Bellico, Shrika's own commands were to be taken over yours."
Oats could see from Fetching's expression that Hoodwink spoke true. She held her hand out, flicking her fingers at Jrika's note. Oats handed it over.
"I abide by Jrika's wishes to remain hidden," Hood went on while the chief read. "As I abided by them when she asked to meet with Crafty."
"Why would she do that?" Oats said, trying to keep the growl from his voice.
"The wizard will explain."
"What, have you reached the limit of your words for the year?"
Hood did not respond.
"How did you find him?" Jackal asked, with no small amount of heat.
"I let it be known I wished to speak."
"Too much of that going on in this hoof,"
the chief said, shooting a sour eye at Oats.
"That was a fool-ass risk, Hood. Jrika's wishes or not, you could have brought Zirko's hunters right to you."
"I was careful."
Fetch turned from them all to stare at the keep. She shook her head.
"And now that smug sack of suet is sitting in there, waiting for a palaver."
"What do you want to do?"
It was Jackal who asked, but Oats was wondering along with him. Fetch turned and handed Jrika's message back.
"She asked us to listen, so we'll listen. Jrika earned that much. But when the time for talking ends, Hood, I need to know where you'll stand."
"Beside you, Chief."
Fetch nodded.
"Good enough. Let's go."
Chapter 17. The Sons of Perdition's voting table could have hosted a feast. There were 100 chairs if there was one, but Oates' attention was too diverted to waste on a count. Small wonder Father's brood of sworn brethren had to assemble in the keep's great hall just for a hoof meet. There were more axes on that table than Oates had ever seen in one place. Where the bastards had cast their dissenting votes into a stump, the sons used an entire gatehouse door suspended by chains behind the table's head. Despite the glut of chairs, no one sat. Oates and Jackal stood flanking Fetch on one side of the table, Crafty and his demon on the other. Hoodwink waited at the foot, far removed, favoring neither side. Oates tried not to put too much weight on the choice of Hood's position, but it was impossible. Fetch and Crafty started speaking at the same time.
"Why did Shriek? You are losing this war."
With any other two mongrels, it might have been humorous. The chief took a breath. Oates waited for Crafty's smile, the smile that would turn this hall into a battlefield. It didn't come. Instead, face placid, the wizard set the jar containing Bellico's tongue on the table.
"She wished to be free from this."
Crafty indicated the jar with a dip of his head. Fetch's jaw muscles bulged.
"You removed a god from her head without killing her."
It wasn't exactly a question, more in aggravated acceptance of what this foe was capable of.
"Let us say I brokered their separation," Crafty replied.
"Hells," Jackal said. "You made a bargain with Bellico." "What?" Crafty cocked an eyebrow.
"Friend Jackal, does it vex you to know we are, both of us, beholden to the master slave?"
Jackal didn't answer.
"Be at ease," Crafty said, waving the matter away. "Jrika wished to depart Urwandules. Bellico did not. I merely cut a path for their divergent desires. As to where she went after, I am ignorant. It was not I serving as the halfling's confidant."
The wizard's eyes cut briefly to Hood.
"Now, let us return to your inability to win this war."
"Why did you help her?" Oates demanded.
Crafty's smile arrived, wide and warm.
"Why did you?"
"You fat fuck."
Fetch threw an arm out, barring Oates from charging over the table. Fuchtus tensed, brandishing his axe. Somewhere on the way to the Great Hall, the demon had plucked free the bolts piercing his body, though the wounds remained open. The chief spun, got in Oates's face. He didn't need her glare to tell him he was being a fool ass, and a two-tongued one in the bargain. It was he who'd convinced her to talk, to at least hear what Crafty had come to say. Now here he was, trying to vault large-ass tables to wring the pus out of cunt-faced wizards and their devil pets. Over what? One baiting smile he knew Crafty kept loaded at all times? "Sorry," Oates said, taking a lesson from Murrow. He backed off. "Sorry."
"It is I that should offer apologies," Crafty said. "And I do, friend Oates. I find myself in a room where I know nothing I say will be trusted. However, I should not allow flippancy to replace truth, even if they are equal in their waste of breath. I ask your pardon, and I will give you an honest answer, though you will be hard-pressed to accept it as such."
The wizard gestured at the jar.
"This is a shield. I return to Ulwandulas knowing I am neither welcomed nor loved. It would be foolish to come unclad against reprisal. And so, as Fuchtus serves as shield against dread fetching, so too does the tongue of Bellico shield me against Zirko, the hero father. They are the powers in these lot lands. I had to ensure they would not stand in the way of what I have come to do." "You can trust him to help himself."
Jrika's letter was now tucked beneath Oates's brigand, but its words sprang to his mind.
"In doing so, he helped me."
Oates found he was struggling with the awful notion that Crafty had just given them a truthful answer.
"I can't speak for Zirko," Fetching said. "But you're wrong, Uhad, if you trust that horned fuck and his shiny axe can protect you."
"You are welcome to test me," Fuchtus replied, his accented Hisparthan rolling rough and deep from his prodigious chest. His head swiveled to take in the room. "You are all welcome to test me. And let Badra count the dead."
Crafty laid a hand on the demon's forearm and gave it a ring-weighted pat.
"No need, I hope. Fetching, we are enemies. That was my doing. In this you know I do not lie. So I would beg your patience for a moment to hear me speak other words that have no need of trust to be true. Winter is ended. Hisparta has come. An army surrounds the Castile, and so your Zahasin allies are cut off. Another force took the eastern port of Ursi and besieged Thricehold. You lost the fortress, the lot, and the entirety of a hoof. You faced one of their sorcerers and were nearly slain. At least one other with such craft has entered your lands, come up the Guadalquivir with a fleet that also served to reinforce Kalbarka, already in the crown's possession. You managed a blockade in the north,
but lacked the foresight and the ships to protect the delta. So Hisparta needs but to set sail from their western ports, bring ships down the length of this great peninsula, and invade from the south, unimpeded.
Not unimpeded, Jackal declared.
As ever, brave Jackal, blind luck and daring rewarded you. Yet what of the next fleet, set to depart Galissa in 4 days?
Crafty spoke the news without care, but he may as well have dumped a bucket of cold hog piss over their heads. None called him a liar now. They'd be fools to discount such tidings.
More men, more horses, more provender to feed them. You killed a single sorcerer, Fetching. More are coming. I am pained to say, you and Jackal are not enough to stop them. Hisparta has their own champions, with armies to protect them.
Oates's hand drifted to rub at the aching scar gifted to him by the maiden spear. Crafty continued to address them in swift, steady tones.
I have no doubt you will fight fiercely, make a valiant stand, feed woeful numbers of frails on foals to the vultures. Alas, I also have no doubt that you will be defeated. Hisparta has, at this moment, 3 footholds in the lots. I suspect it will take all of the strength you can muster to defy just one of them. In that time, the crown will not be idle. 1 year, perhaps 2, and you will wake to find yourself trapped here at Mongrel's Cradle, forced to choose between dying with what remains of your loyal mongrels and fleeing across the deluge into exile. And I cannot imagine you would run, Chief Fetching.
Fetch sneered. This is the part where you offer to help us. Crafty shook his head.
I have already helped you. Now comes the part where I ask if you will help yourself.
Jackal growled. Give the word, Fetch. I can't stomach any more of his spewed shit. The chief held up a staying hand.
Speak plainly, wizard, and quickly.
The schemes of empire are never plain and rarely quick, but let us say that the sultans of Tyrkania do not wish to see your rebellion crushed. Once the mongrel hoofs are gone, Hisparta will resettle Ulwandulas in earnest, bring it back under the full weight and shadow of the crown. This the empire wishes to prevent. Already they have strived to bolster your cause. The corsairs protecting your harbor would long have been wrested away by his Spartan coin if the sultans had not tipped the scales, and the loyalty, of the Tradrians with larger sacks of gold. And before you dub me a liar, look to Jackal. He may have shared some wine and ribald jests with the freebooter captains, but they will never love him more than their own enrichment. He knows the guild princes of Tradria well enough from his travels, as well as the wealth of the sultans. You would not have one without the other, not with the meager hoard dug from the pit of homage.
Jackal's mouth had drawn into a lipless line. Crafty picked a piece of straw from his robes and let it fall.
Tyrkania's own fleet is not so fickle. They will put enough ships in your service to guard this harbor and set up a cordon at the mouth of the Guadalquivir. The river will be closed to Hisparta from both ends, and Kalbarka will again find itself without reliable supply. As for the army surrounding the Castile, I am confident the crown will be less disposed to attacking when our envoy reaches their camp. The Saracens remain subjects of the Empire, and any violence against them will be considered an ignoble spilling of Tyrkanian blood.
Both Jackal and the chief twitched with annoyance. Oates didn't know Tarif and his men as well as they did, but one of the first things you learned about the Saracens was their hatred for Tyrkania. Likely not even Fetch could have stopped them from leaping over the table, scimitars drawn, if they'd been here to listen to Crafty's claims of continued bonds with their conquerors. Tarif had led his tribe out of the empire at great peril to seek a new life.
the Sheikh risked that life when he threw in with the mongrel hoofs. To have that stance used as a bluffing wager in Crafty's writhing snake pit of a mind was an insult the Zahrasins would not suffer. Yet there were no Zahrasins in the hall. Just a hand count of half-orcs, and one, whatever the hell's Fuktus was. But the devil didn't matter. Neither did most of the mongrels. The words that mattered came from only two, the wizard and the chief.
"You'd have us trade Hisparth's boot heel for Tyrkanya's slave collar?" Fetch hissed. "We should begin calling you simpleton if you thought I'd ever accept that."
"The sultans do not want these lands. If it were so, you would be in chains even now."
"Tyrkanya wants the world," Jackal said. "Try again."
"Tyrkanya wants Hisparta," Crafty admitted. "It would behoove the lots to help them take it."
"You're trying to sell us they'll leave the lots alone after?" Oates put in. "I ain't been there, but that don't sound like Tyrkanya's way to me."
Jackal grunted. "It's not."
"And we'll have invited them in," Fetching said, eyes piercing Crafty. "At your insistence."
Slowly, the chief drew the kataras from her hips.
"I have an answer for your sultans. You'll deliver it in a basket filled with your own head."
Jackal's sword filled his hand. So did Hood's, though he made no move to either side of the table. Fuktus smiled with relish, hands twisting around the haft of his axe. Oates had his tulwar, but he left it sheathed. Compared to the occupants of this hall, a thrice-blood with a sword was about as dangerous as one of the chairs.
"Wait,"
Crafty said, holding up a hand. His voice remained calm, but Oates thought he detected the barest quiver in the wizard's fingers.
"Beyond myself, Tyrkanya will not set foot in Ulwandulas. Such an act would bring immediate war with Hisparta."
Fetch's brow arched.
"But aiding the lots with a blockade will not?"
"It dares Hisparta to aggression, yes. Yet they will have to strike the first blow. They will not take it, this I assure you. The queen shall not risk conflict with the empire while the mongrel hoofs are in revolt. Your rebellion provides opportunity for the sultans to offer themselves as mediator, to wage a war where ink is spilled instead of blood, where the entreaties of envoys replace the anguished cries of the dying."
"With you as their general," Jackal said with distaste. Ignoring him, Crafty implored Fetching.
"Hear me. Tyrkanya will do as they wish. Your acceptance is not required. They paid off the corsairs so you would see this. I am bound for Hisparta, Chief Fetching, and you would be foolish to attempt to stop me, for you know well the discord I bring to those that take me in. Slay me in this hall to slake your lust for vengeance, and you crush a scorpion that would crawl into Hisparta's bed."
"The throne, you mean," Fetch replied.
"Rather kill a fork-tongued ton of shit now than a usurping sorcerer king later."
"My chance to wear Hisparta's crown passed when you thwarted the orc incursion. The frails would only accept a half-breed as their ruler if he had saved them from the thicks. Now they are at war with the hoofs, cursing the name of the hoof queen by day, and fearing she will come north to redden her hands with their children's blood by night. Their hatred for half-orcs is a river deeper and wider than ever."
"Sounds like that makes you a shit ambassador to send, then," Fetch said.
Crafty shrugged.
"I am well versed in being hated, but I will also be feared. It is important that Hisparta sees the strength of Tyrkania's sympathies toward the hoofs. Who better to display such but another ash-colored half-breed?"
"With his djinn slave at his side," Jackal said. Fuktus's lips curled back.
"I am no slave."
Jackal held the demon's glare unflinching and sniffed. Crafty leaned over the table toward Fetching.
but also with those at my side that you choose to represent the hoofs.
The chief frowned.
You would have me send riders into Hisparta? With you? So they can be taken prisoner and executed?
The crown will not be so foolish. Hisparta will know us for what we are, envoys of Tyrkania and the Lotlands, come to discuss the future and wisdom of this growing conflict.
And offer them what? They want nothing from us save our obedience. We won't be fucking dogs.
Crafty arched a brow.
If you wish to win the meat that is Ulwandula's, you must be. As we speak, this land is clamped between the jaws of Hisparta and Tyrkania, pulled at and fought over. It tears and bleeds. You think the mongrel hoofs are in that fight? I tell you, you are but maggots clinging to the prize, and you will be devoured by whichever dog wins. I offer a chance to place yourselves truly within the contest.
Fetch hesitated. Oates could see she wasn't pleased by the wizard's words, but still she considered them. Crafty saw it too, and pressed.
There are many ways to fight the crown, and it now rests unsteadily on the queen's head. The king consort's death has seeded the court with uncertainty. Ursaria Trastorius is the most powerful ruler Hisparta has seen in a century, and even she, for a fortnight, made the false claim her husband was merely injured. Their union is childless, and she is surrounded by grasping dukes and capricious barons whose ambitions are now turned from fighting half-orcs to becoming the next king consort. Many within the nobility do not share their sovereign's appetite for war. Not for a dusty piece of gristle infested with orcs and the progeny born from their raids. There is a chance, likely the only one you will ever see, to forever rid Hisparta of its desire for Ulwandulas. You have shown willingness to wage war on dusty plains. Show them you have the courage to offer battle in their courts as well, and you can only help your cause. You can offer the ruling Frail's proof, through their own eyes, that half-orcs are more than uncouth marauders.
More? Fetching said, her voice dropping to a dangerous hush.
They would have us be even less. They have mongrels in Hisparta, Tyrkanian. Pit fighters, field hands, whores, slaves.
Crafty did not shrink from her simmering gaze.
Yes, but not hoof riders, not free mongrels.
The calm truth of the wizard's words slapped against the hot iron of Fetch's anger.
There are allies to be found in Hisparta, dread Fetching. Powerful allies. You cannot win them by remaining nothing more than a distant rebel. And you will not help any of our fellow mongrels still in bondage by dying down here and allowing the history of this war to be written by the Queen's chroniclers.
Oates could see the bulge of Fetch's working jaw. The katara hanging in her right hand rocked against her leg as her wrist twisted back and forth, reflecting the faster working of her conflicted thoughts. Oates held his breath, waiting for her to choose. His eyes drifted to the table, resting on the nearest axe before moving to the massive door. The Sons may not have had the hardest reputation in the lots, but from the midpoint of the table, where Oates now stood, any mongrel had to be a sure arm to make that cast. A strong arm. Oates wondered, could he make that throw? Would he make that throw? If Fetch chose blood in this hall, in this moment,
I'll go.
The words left Oates's mouth, urged by those in Jrika's letter.
You can save Wily, Idris.
Every eye in the room was upon him, but Oates looked only at his chief.
I'll go, he said again.
Chapter 18. There was something wrong with the pie. Oates could tell by looking at it. The crust was gummy and underdone. He took a bite. The filling was oversalted. Oates kept eating. The sauce was a touch curdled. Oates hummed in appreciation. The speckle beans were pebbles, resisting his chewing and rolling beneath his teeth. He swallowed them whole. The onions and mushrooms had congealed into an unpleasant jelly. Oates choked it all down, and when Beryl offered him a second helping, he held out his empty bowl with a smile. Many an orphan had been raised on her barbarian pie. More than a few slopheads, and at least two sworn bastards, had snuck back to Winsome on occasion in hopes of begging a portion. Oates had never known Beryl to serve a bad one. But there was something wrong with this pie. There was something wrong with his mother. Oates hadn't believed it when Jackal told him she'd given up the daily care of the foundlings, but the house she occupied in Salduba was silent, the trestle hardly large enough to accommodate Oates, Thistle, and Murrow. Sitting upon a stool a little removed from the table, Beryl watched the boy.
"He's barely eating," she said,
the veil of concern not quite covering the judgment. Murrow was waging a dutiful war with his meal. He didn't complain or make faces. Such antics weren't known to a child brought up under the cruel hand of the stable master. Murrow had gone hungry enough in his life to eat whatever he was given. But he wasn't having an easy time with the hard, barely cooked beans. "You're used to mongrel appetites, Mother," Oates said.
"His stomach's been sour since the ship," Thistle added, stroking the back of Murrow's head.
The boy looked up.
"It's not. No, it's not. Now."
Ernest's little cub didn't know when he was being rescued. Oates felt a swell of pride and put his spoon into Murrow's bowl, digging out a healthy chunk and shoving it in his own mouth, making an exaggerated animal noise. Murrow and Thistle laughed. Beryl's weary mask was cracked by the thinnest of smiles.
"Jackal hit a cicada in his pie once to teach you not to do that," she said.
Oates nodded, chuckling.
"Worked, too. Though it weren't Jacko, it was... Aw, oh, hells. That other mongrel, one with the crooked legs. Can't believe I forgot his name. What was it?"
Beryl frowned at the question. She thought a moment. Slowly, her head began to shake.
"It was Jackal, Idris. He hid the cicada in his stew so you wouldn't eat it anymore. Issa put him up to it. I wouldn't forget that. I was so angry."
Oates went back to eating. He didn't mention the fact that Beryl was now saying stew when it had been pie a moment ago. And it wasn't Jackal. The name of the other boy came to Oates now. Diogo. Fetch never put him up to anything. Nor was Beryl mad when he'd done it. She'd always encouraged Diogo to be clever, knowing his crippled legs would keep him from the hoof. How could she forget him? Murrow laid his spoon down in his empty bowl.
"I want an orange, thank you, please."
Beryl's brow knit. She looked at Oates.
"A what?"
"It's a Zahrasine fruit, Mother. I can't really say it either."
"Narange,"
Thistle offered, her carefully pronounced urjar making Beryl's scowl deepen.
"Whatever that is, there's none here." "No, of course not,"
Thistle said with a genuine smile.
"It was our habit at the Castile."
"Why don't you two go down to the port?" Oates said. "I wager there will be something tart and pulpy to be found."
"Don't be crude, Idris," Beryl said.
"I meant fruit."
"And don't speak when your mouth is full."
Thistle helped Murrow slide off the bench and whispered in his ear. He went around the table to Beryl.
"Thank you for my food," he said.
Before Beryl could answer, Murrow embraced her, heedless that she stiffened. Thistle leaned down and kissed her cheek as the boy withdrew.
"We'll return."
Beryl nodded.
"Good. Good.
Find me a pet monkey, Oates instructed Murrow as he crossed to the door. Thistle squeezed his arm on the way out. Oates returned to his food, delaying what needed to be done.
She should look in on the foundlings, Beryl said, eyes still on the doorway. That wet nurse father's employed looks like a gone addict.
We've been, Oates said. Truth was, the bastard's orphans were fat and happy, as were all three of the wet nurses in the Sun's service. Salduba by the sea would have been a paradise for anyone. After all the terrors the bastard's children had suffered, it was a dream. Oates had hoped his mother would find succor here too, but Beryl looked sallow and unkempt, diminished.
You see them much, the children?
Beryl's head drew back on her neck, affronted.
Every day?
It wasn't true. None at the Sun's orphanage had seen her in weeks, but it would do no good to confront his mother and risk her wrath. According to Jackal, the chief had placed a serving girl with Beryl when she first began to withdraw. The poor frail had fled the house weeping before the first mourning was over. When Jackal had asked her about it, Beryl told him she didn't understand why she couldn't have sweeps. Jackal was forced to remind her sweeps died in Winsome. Beryl shouted him out of the house, casting blame and a water pitcher at his back.
With Thistle returned, I'll take our own back in hand, she declared now, her face daring Oates to challenge the claim.
Her strength, once forged to her spine, was now exposed, flailing in the air as a threat against anyone, everyone. Wielded so brazenly against those who meant her no harm, Beryl's steel became a frightened display, a show of weakness. Oates nearly didn't tell her. It would have been a simple thing, keeping his mouth shut, and a shameful act of disrespect. Beryl hadn't raised a coward.
Mother, I might be going away.
Annoyance kindled upon Beryl's face. She stood, gathering up the bowls.
You all think I've entered my dotage. I know, Idris, who you are, where you've been, where she will keep sending you. I've lived in the lots longer than any of you have been alive, and I still know the direction of every mountain range in Ulwandulas, including the Smeltids. So don't treat the woman that taught you how to eat with a spoon like a fool.
Oates repressed a sigh, knowing the sound would only rile her further.
I don't think you're a fool. Wasn't how I meant to sound. It ain't the Smelteds where I'm going. Where I might go, I reckon is more earnest. It's Hispartha.
Beryl turned and deposited the bowls in the wash bucket. Oates waited on her reaction. She cocked her head at the bucket.
You forgotten how to scour?
Oates jumped up. No, mother. His hands entered the water, snagging the floating brush on the way. Beryl returned to her stool.
Tell me.
Oates talked while he scrubbed. He told her all of it, slowly and carefully, to make sure she understood. It was selfish, but Oates needed her guidance, not her confusion. Yes, she was forgetting things and not caring for the orphans, and the pie was bad. But this was still Beryl, still the wisest person Oates had ever known. The person who taught him whom to trust, how to trust, not only through stern lesson, but by proving to him every day of his life that she could always be trusted. The chore didn't take near as long as the tale. When he was done, Beryl's jaw was set in a way that never boded well.
Fetching agreed to this? She asked.
Not yet, Oates replied. But she's considering it. Let Crafty and his demon leave in peace.
And Hood?
Oates let out a hard breath.
He stayed. Chief was shut up with him for a long while.
Without you?
Without anyone, not even Jackal.
There's not another chief in the lots that wouldn't view what Hood did as a betrayal.
And were it any other mongrel, Fetch would have too. But there are bigger things than loyalty to a hoof these days. She said that herself. I think Hood was trying to make sure she listened.
I'd wager it was Shrika, not Crafty, that asked him to help prevent blood.
Beryl's mouth twisted.
That wizard still enjoyed watching bastards pitted against each other.
Reckon so.
Beryl stood.
You should go down and meet Thistle.
Oates was perplexed by the sudden dismissal. Hells, had she forgotten what he'd just told her?
Come with me, he offered, thinking to remind her on the way.
She needed out of this lonely dwelling.
Beryl shook her head.
No, I hate the smell of the sea.
Oates felt his heart sink. She would, wouldn't she? Not that anywhere in Salduba offered an escape from the briny air.
Go on, his mother insisted. Thistle will not thank you if that boy finds a monkey and she's left to deny him alone.
I can't leave until you understand that...
She chopped his words off with a sharp wave.
Idris, you're not going to Hisparta. I understand you believe that you might. I understand you think me a fuddled old crone who can't hold on to the last thing she was told. I understand what you don't, that Isabet will never agree to anything that wretched Tyrkanian puts forth. You're not going because your chief will not send you, not for all the gold in Sardis, and certainly not at the urging of an enemy with more faces than he has chins. So, enough with this fretting over me and leaving for Hisparta. You're staying in the lots, Idris, where you belong.
Oates made no reply. The truth had taken him unawares, delivered a scoundrel's punch to the guts. He'd sought his mother's incisive clarity, but was unprepared for the direction it cut. She wasn't the befuddled fool in this room.
Beryl peered at him, saw something she didn't like, something Oates couldn't hide.
She took a step closer, face turning grave.
You want to go?
Still, he said nothing. He didn't need to. Beryl's eyes became bright. The fury in their cores caused the tears at their edges to shine.
Now you can explain to me something I don't understand, she said, teeth tight.
It's because of Wiley.
Don't.
And Warbler.
Don't!
Oates struggled to keep his voice low in the face of his mother's growing agitation.
I have to help them. If I travel with Crafty, I can convince him to undo what he did. Bargain for it. I don't know how yet, but I'll make him remove the plague.
Beryl's hands came up, tensed into quivering claws. She rattled them in Oates's face.
Leave them in peace! Why can't you fucking bastards not simply leave them in peace?
She seized the wash bucket and flung it, scattering water and shards of shattered bowls across the room. The violent motion forced her back to turn. Oates moved to calm her, but Beryl spun on him, face twisted with hateful, ugly grief.
What more must they suffer for your meddling? Banishment and wizards, plagues and agonizing magic. He's a boy! Only a boy, but his life is a hell. And you would make it worse. Will Warbler be torn from him next? Will he be left alone with those hiding, useless rest skins? Or will none of you be satisfied until he is dead?
Oates could have stopped himself. He didn't want to. Seizing his mother by the arms, he pushed her back a step, shook her as he screamed into her face.
I am trying to save his life!
He was larger, stronger, louder. He'd long known how to transform his voice into a bestial cudgel. It was a mistake to try to beat Beryl down with such a crude weapon. Oates had known that before impatience and the unjust lash of her words had goaded him into selfish cruelty. Yet still he'd done it. There was no undoing the painful pressure of his bruising fingers, the threat in his shouting, the shame of laying hands on a loved one in pain. Beryl met his ferocity with a glazed look, cold and dispirited. For a single hellish heartbeat, something, everything between them broke. Oates felt a lifetime of affection extinguished, saw the sparks scatter upon winds of regret, and die in the agonizing silence that replaced his outburst. Denying that death, Beryl rekindled the flame in the next instant. Her hands came up to rest upon his face, even as his own fell from her arms. In that touch, Oates felt the chains that bound them return, hot from fires of forgiveness. Beryl's thumbs rested near the corners of his eyes, the heels of her hands pressed into his cheeks, channeling his tears into his mouth. She waited, with all the patience he had lacked, until he could look her squarely.
"Never reckoned I'd curse the day I saw myself in you," she said.
Her words rippled with constrained emotion.
"Perhaps this is why mongrels were not meant to know their mothers."
Oates shook his head, pressing his cheeks harder into her hands.
"Don't say that."
She shushed him.
"Listen to me. You need to kill that part of you. Right now. Damn me to all the hells for giving it to you, but I am telling you to rid yourself of care for that child. Wiley is lost to us. You cannot save him. Try, and you will only bring more pain. To him, yourself, all those around you."
Her voice broke. She mastered a rising sob, choked it down.
"You're all so afraid I've lost my senses, that my memory has fled. Then tell me why I still remember every moment in the hands of the Fix. Tell me why age hasn't given me the mercy of forgetting that orcs only laugh when—"
Beryl's mouth clamped shut. She grimaced, the muscles in her stricken face squeezing out the tears. She looked away, though Oates felt her thumbs rubbing his face.
"I know what it is to want to save a child," she said. "What it is to suffer for it. And I know what it is to have that child return, to learn it too suffered greatly, despite all you tried to do. To know that baby lived, only to become a monster."
"Mother, Wiley ain't ruined. He ain't a monster."
Beryl raised her head to look at him once more. The tears had tempered her eyes, restoring their old steel.
"Wiley is the plague bearer. What's your memory of the Claymaster?"
Oates struggled to answer. Beryl's hands fell from his face. She wilted onto the stool.
"Give this up, Idris. There are no words you can say, no bargain you can make that will ever, ever make Crafty help you. Go down to the harbor, be with the boy you could save, and figure how you can survive Fetch's war long enough for that to matter. Do it for me. I already lost Avram trying to help Wiley. I can't lose you to the same folly."
Oates swallowed.
"You saying we shouldn't have even tried to cure him?"
The question leached what little strength Beryl had left. Her answer could barely be heard in the little room.
"I should have seen there was no difference between taking one child by wagon to Dogfall and swimming the gut with another."
Jackal stood waiting for Oates outside the house. His dark desert robes contrasted sharply against Salduba's cobbled streets and whitewashed buildings.
"Chief reached a decision?" Oates asked.
Jackal shook his head.
"Just reckoned I should be here, after you saw her. Didn't go in because—"
"Because it's your fault she was banished from Dogfall." Oates didn't say it. This day didn't need any more bitter words.
"I brought this," Jackal said, holding his arm up to display a jug dangling from his finger.
Oates stepped to him and grabbed the vessel. He removed the stopper and took a pull. Brusque wine flowed over his tongue. It was good. The best he'd had since, well, ever.
"How is she?" Jackal asked, glancing at the door to the house.
Oates took another drink before answering.
"You know. I'd hoped that seeing you would help."
Oates laughed. The day wasn't done with bitter sounds after all. He started walking, but stopped when Jackal fell into step beside him.
"A favor, brother?"
"Name it," Jack replied. Go down to the harbor. Find Thistle. Tell her. Oates fumbled for the right words. You needed to be alone, Jackal said, forcing his voice to remain light and easy. Oates gave him a grateful nod. That. And that I'm sorry. Don't think she'll need the second part, Oates. Jackal clapped him on the shoulder and turned away, his measured stride carrying him confidently toward the docks. Oates was less certain of his own destination. He found himself in one of Salduba's wine sinks, then another, and a third, fourth. It was a fool-ass pursuit for an afternoon, getting drunk. It had become a habit during his first turn at the pits. The only thing he had to dull the pain of the fights, the only way to drown the screams of the crowd. Zhrika had put a hobble on it before he became just another sot forcing the wine and the fights into a race for what would kill him swifter. If she were here to see him now, she'd have pinned him with her one-eyed scowl. Oates could hear the admonishments.
Sure, get drunk. That's what the world needs, another swilling, slurring thrice blood.
Oates chuckled into his flagon. This wine wasn't as good as Jackal's, but that had been exhausted before he left the street. A man sitting farther down the bench looked over, his gaze drawn by the lonely laughter.
Something in my beard? Oates challenged.
Shaking his head, the frail went in search of a better place to sit.
An angry thrice looking for a fight now. Yes, that's a much better choice.
I'd tell you to shut up,
Oates muttered, tilting the flagon for the last fingers.
But you ain't here. You got what you wanted and fucked off. Where to, Zrika? Calmaris? The drag... Oh, that tasted better a first time. The Dragonfly Isles?
A hand slithered up Oates's arm and didn't stop until it reached the side of his neck. The hand was attached to a woman, near as drunk as himself. She kept twisting at the hips as she touched him, giving that offer of a smile used by whores who learned long ago that words were a waste of time.
Hells!
Oates exclaimed, louder than he'd meant to.
The fucking sons! Your wine is good. Whores is comely. The castle has a beach!
His laughter stampeded out of his chest. The whore took it for encouragement and moved to sit on his lap. Oates bumped her awkwardly as he stood, nearly knocked her down.
Pardons, he said, and stumbled out the door.
The woman followed him out, called something at his back. An insult or a final temptation, he couldn't say. The tide of wine was all he could hear. No, that was the surf. Oates' ass was in sand. When had he reached the beach? When had the sun set? The sea was queer at night, a shifting, inky void between countless stark stars and the pale, glowing swath of sand. It might have been beautiful, but Oates couldn't focus on it for long without getting dizzy. He laid back, the sound of